Let's talk movies now. And Graham Tuckett joins me now. Hi there, Graham.
Hey, Jesse. How are you? And I've got one for you as well.
Yeah, yes, please.
Family Guy with Peter takes the giant frog out of the box and throws it at the wall. And it's like the journey of that frog as it slowly slides down the wall just has me on the floor every time. And it's that same thing, just that comedy of like, how long can you get out of this,
gag? That I think actually Family Guy might be one of the ones that does it the most often, right?
Oh, Family Guy, genius at it. Like the whole, the fight with the chicken. I can literally come home from a bar and put that on YouTube just to watch before I go to bed, just to make me happy.
So I'm putting that into YouTube later, Family Guy, Frog and Box, and Fight with Chicken.
Oh, yeah. No, that's your Friday night sorted, absolutely. No need to go to the movies at all.
Dave says The Great Vomit of Team America, which I haven't seen that film, but I believe him.
Yeah, I'm not sure how well that one would have aged, actually, but it's a notorious scene.
The famous routine, who's on first? I think that's Abbott and Costello, someone suggests.
Classic, yep.
And yes.
And recreated by many people over the years too.
Yeah. Okay, Graham, what have you been watching?
Right, back to what I'm here for. Bones and All. Like, it's not often you get to say the words art house and cannibal in the same sentence, but I think we can do it for Bones and All. Bones and All is it's an American film from this year. It's actually made by Luca Guadagnino. I figure if you pronounce Italian with that sort of flourish, it's going to be more or less right. Luca Guadagnino.
Yeah.
He's an Italian film director. He's probably best known for I Am Love. He did the Suspiria remake a couple of years ago. He also did Call Me By Your Name with Armie Hammer and Timothée Chalamet a couple of years ago. But he has come back with his first ever film that he's actually shot in North America. And it's a cannibal road movie. Of all things.
Come on.
Yeah, for real. Timothée Chalamet, again, who is a startlingly good young actor. He's the hottest young male property in Hollywood at the moment. He's the lead in Dune. He was the lead in The King, doing the sort of whole Shakespeare, Henry V thing.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, he plays Paul Atreides in the Dune films that are rolling out over the next year or two. So he's kind of massive.
Yeah.
And if you know a woman under the age of about 20 in her life, she'd be like, oh, Timothée Chalamet.
No, that's how I know him. I know him from people lusting after him on social media.
Yeah. No, he's a fine-looking young man. Him and a woman called Taylor Russell, who I didn't think I was aware of, but she's a, again, very, very promising young American actor. She was in Escape Room back in about 2016, and I sort of dialed up my review of Escape Room, and I was really chuffed that I said the only good thing in that film was a really promising young actor called Taylor Russell.
You spotted it.
I spotted her. 4 years later, here she turns up opposite Timothée Chalamet and also opposite Mark Rylance, who's like old school British Shakespearean. Steven Spielberg calls him the best actor in the world.
Wow.
The last time we saw Mark Rylance, probably on Netflix in that Don't Look Up, he dialed in the absolutely bonkers scientist who convinces them all to get in the spaceship and go to Mars. That was Mark Rylance.
Cool.
Anyway, so you've got Timothée Chalamet and Taylor Russell, these beautiful young people. They are drifters. They meet. They get together. They start a road trip in the pickup truck that Timothée Chalamet has stolen. And it turns out he's stolen it from his last victim because the pair of them are afflicted with cannibalism, which in this telling is kind of like, it's kind of a disease you get. I guess. It's sort of something, you're born with it and that's it and that's your lot.
Yeah.
Cannibals can tell each other. They can literally sniff each other out from miles away. When you're a fine young cannibal, you might only need to eat every couple of months. But as you get older, as you become sort of get into your adulthood and middle age and later years, like Mark Rylance is, you might need to eat every day or two just to keep like the fevers of withdrawal away. So this is the setup. Like, they've got these two young lovers who we're absolutely on their side. And there is Mark Rylance as the older, nastier, meaner, incredibly dangerous and wily sort of older cannibal who presents himself as very much their friend and protector at first. Yeah, da, da, da. And it turns into this really beautiful, strangely beautiful road movie, teen romance. Like I was writing it up for the paper, and I said this has got a lot more in common with films like On the Road than it has sort of Natural Born Killers or any of that nonsense. It's very much like a great American road trip. There's cornfields and sunsets. Everything just looks a bit Terrence Malick and beautiful very, very often. And yet it's punctuated with moments of absolutely bloodthirsty violence. And, you know, this is in every way. I think it's rolled out as an R-16, but it might have been pushing an R-18. Because these people occasionally are just elbows deep in whoever they happen to, you know, bump into. But at the same time, it's a very beautiful film. It's quite touching. It's definitely a romantic drama. And you can't really describe it as a horror movie, even though it's occasionally absolutely bloody horrific.
So it's about cannibalism, but it's not about the cannibalism. Yeah.
As I said in the intro, it's like you don't get to say art house and cannibal in the same sentence that often, but this is that one. This is that genre, you know?
Bones and All with Bones Timothy and Chalamet. All.
If the Timothy Chalamet fan in your household really wants to go and see it, it is an R-16, by the way, not an R-18. So, like, just go with the warning. They might not quite see Timothy Chalamet in the same light from then on.
Yeah, they'll probably like him more. That's a worrying thing.
Oh,
no. Tell me about, by the way,
yes?
Comedy of Repetition. Do you recall in someone's reminded me of the Holy Grail, Monty Python, the Holy Grail, there's someone running towards the castle and they keep like cutting back to him. And each time they cut back to him, he's still running. And he's still the same distance away. Yeah,
it got me thinking about, you just reminded me of A Fish Called Wanda.
Where
the guy's stuck in the concrete and the other one in the concrete mixer is trying to run him down. But the concrete mixer is moving at this absolute snail's pace. So the scene just drags and drags and drags.
Tell me about The Road Dance.
Oh, this is beautiful. This is getting a very limited release. Again, sort of, I always say this, but if you live in a decent-sized town that's got a very small cinema, chances are you'll get a chance to see The Road Dance, and I think you should absolutely grab it. The Road Dance is a Scottish film. I'm going to say, maybe unsurprisingly, it won the Audience Award at the Edinburgh Film Festival last year, but it's also been very, very sort of highly rated and loved by different, you know, by audiences around the world in the last couple of months. It's set in 1916, so World War One, as far as the Europeans are concerned, has been going for a year or two. It's funny, the American marketing for this, which is what I was exposed to, said in the years before World War One. So I'm watching it and I go, 1916, it's, and suddenly realise that the Americans don't declare World War One to have started until they turned up a year later.
Yeah,
but anyway, it's set in 1916, so it's not the years before World War One. It's two and a half years into it. We are on the Outer Hebrides, which are the rocky outcrop islands off the, I think, the northwestern Scottish coast. Just the wildest and most beautiful-looking part of the world. Absolutely astonishing scenery. And 1916, we're in what's called a croft, which is like a village of effectively stone huts. These people grow potatoes for a living. It's very much a subsistence agricultural economy, but a very, very happy village of, I guess, some couple of hundred people. But some of the local men, effectively teenage boys, have been called up and they're having a bit of a shindig that night. The violins will come out and they'll be dancing literally on the road, because this is a town without a town hall. So hence the road dance. There's a young couple who are in love. She is called Kirsty and he is called, I think Murdo. Yeah, he's called Murdo. And they just, we know that he's going away to fight in the Western Front the next day, and she's very much the village beauty who sort of plied her love to him, and he said, when I come back, we'll go to America together. And it's like, obviously the scene is set for an old-fashioned weepy of the highest order, and that's exactly what The Road Dance turns into. I don't want to spoil this. If you watch the trailer, I think the trailer gives away far too much already. But it is a very, very old-fashioned drama of possibly doomed teen love, of the way that war tears small communities apart, of growing up as a young woman in a very strictly, I'm going to say Calvinist, but a very, very strictly religious settlement at a time like that. I liked one of the British reviewers came up with a lovely line that I was so tempted to poach. And she said, it's a film about people with, just because people are small-minded does not mean they cannot be big-hearted. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was just such a lovely way of describing the interactions between the young woman, Kirsty, I think it is, living in the village, what happens to her after Murdo goes away. And, yeah, just the general tone of the village, these people living in grinding poverty, but at the same time very, 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 very strong community. And religiously, you know, religious to the point of intolerance, and yet at the same time absolutely loving of themselves, their families, their communities. It was just a lovely sort of character study. The director, writer-director, a bloke called Richie Adams, I'd never heard of him before, I thought, and then I looked him up on IMDb, and he wrote and directed a film back in 2014 called Of Mind and Music, which I have seen, and it was absolutely gorgeous. It's a film about a young woman recovering from a brain injury, set against the New Orleans Mardi Gras. And it's also like it's a drama with a lot of music and all very much about personal connections between people. But the one thing that really commends The Road Dance, you know, it's a little bit saccharine and maybe a little bit sort of overladled on as a drama. But man, just to look at on the big screen, if you're somebody who loves the scenery of, yeah, you know, the British Isles, the Northern Hemisphere, the Outer Hebrides on a big screen shot by a talented cinematographer over the course of some months, like in every possible weather condition, which in the Hebrides could turn up in one day flat. Yeah, from storms and hurricanes to beautiful sunny days and meadows and granite cliffs. It's a spectacular film on a big screen. And like I say, just an old-fashioned weepy. So if that sounds like you, get along and see it. It's lovely.
Great. Could we have 1 minute on The Lost King?
Yeah, look, that's Lost King is rolling out for preview screenings this weekend and next week. Doesn't open officially for a couple of weeks, so maybe I'll leave the heavy lifting to Dom and Ali. But I will say it's a film based on the incredible true story of the woman who sort of believed that she knew where the body of Richard III, the lost king of England, was under a car park in the city of Leicester. And back in, I think it was 2012, 2013, the story unfolded and became obviously something of a cause célèbre in the world's media. The Lost King is it's a lightly fictionalized version of the story. It's got Sally Hawkins and Steve Coogan in the lead, which obviously is a great thing. These are two powerhouse British actors. Stephen Frears, absolutely veteran British director, with The Queen, Philomena, Grifters on his CV. He's put it together. It's like, I watched it and thought, it's a very, very average film, but the story is so good and the cast is so good that you're going to want to see it anyway.
Yeah.
But if you're anywhere near YouTube tonight, after you've watched The Frog Fall Down the Wall and Family Guy, there's a really, really lovely documentary called The King in the Car Park, hosted by a British comedian actor whose name I haven't got at the moment, but he does play Garfunkel in The Detectives, Detectorist, sorry, hosting this beautiful sort of feature-length documentary about the real story. You get to meet the real people who Sally Hawkins and co are playing in The Lost King, and to me that was even a better watch than the feature film, and that's called The King in the Car Park, on free on YouTube.
Very good. And then you can watch Peter Falls and Hurts His Knee from Family Guy from season 2.
All-time classic.
Graham Tucker, great stuff. Thank you so much.
Thanks, sir.
Fantastic reviewing The Lost King, The Road Dance, and Bones and All.